Shalom, 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 baruchim habaim. Welcome. Welcome to Tuesday, April 30th at 11:43 a.m. here in Haaretz, in Israel, in the Galil. I am Rabbi Chasti Uriel Steinbauer, founder and director of the Institute for Holiness, Kehilat Musar Mindfulness. It has been several weeks since we've gathered, mostly to be overwhelmed by the war with Iran and its proxies, and then preparing for Pesach, for the festival of Passover. And so we have a lot to catch up on, which is good because we didn't even have a classical Torah portion last Shabbat. We had the holiday reading for the Passover holiday. And then, of course, we had the reading yesterday for the seventh day of Passover. And for those of you chutz la'aretz, outside of Israel, this is your eighth day of festival of Passover. May you be enjoying it, and you'll be able to watch this afterwards or listen to it on podcast audio. So I'm delighted to have you here. For those of you who can join live on live streaming, on our YouTube channel, please subscribe. And our blog on the website of kehilatmusar.com. Or, of course, on Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and live on Zoom with me. So delighted to have you here today. So where are we? Last time we were together, we covered the first book in the first Torah portion in the book of Leviticus, known as Vayikra in Hebrew. So we are moving into Sav. We have several to catch up on. I plan to record these in the next day or two. So let's move in with how we normally function together. So if you're following along, this was quite some time ago. It's like a month ago. It was on March 30th, 2024. And it was in Adar Bet. And it was on the second day. It was Bet of Adar Bet, of the Hebrew month, of Tavshin Pei Dalin. And it covers Leviticus chapter 6, Pasuk 1, the first verse, through chapter 8, verse 36. So before we begin, what do we always do together? We cover our kavanot, our intentions for today's session. So allow yourself to settle in. I'm going to share screen for those of you watching by video. For those of you listening on podcast audio, you'll hear me summarize these. So we see this time together of engaging in awakening, combining Torah and Musar mindfulness to gain the most out of what our ancestors and God wanted to pass on to us through the Torah, through the Hebrew Bible. So we see this as an act of radical self-care, that we're doing it to strengthen our own soul, to be of benefit to others in the future. We're also doing this as an act for others to strengthen our relationship with them, so that we can be a better conduit of God's good to others when they need us. And finally, we're doing this to strengthen our relationship with the divine, self, other, divine, beautiful threefold. We're doing it to strengthen our relationship with the Creator, however we define that relationship, so that we can be a better conduit of God's good to others when they need us. So there are our intentions, our kavanot for what we want to accomplish today in studying and learning from Parshat Sav, okay? Sav coming from the root of to command. So what happens here? Let's give a summary of this Torah portion, all right? So Moshe, our beloved teacher, ancestor, and Aharon, his brother, they learn what to do in order to start offering karbanot, sacrifices, from last week's Torah portion. So we start off with the book of Leviticus, Vayikra, is known as Torat Kohanim, the teachings and instructions for the Kohanim. But then it begs the question, well, why is it included in the whole Torah? Why isn't a separate book just given exclusively to the Kohanim? What are we who are not Kohanim? Why are we receiving these instructions and teachings? What are we to learn from them? Okay, so it's not just simply Torah Kohanim. It may appear that way on the front, but there's something there for us. So they begin to start offering the korbanot. So first, the Kohanim, the priest, find out about their tasks to prepare for each korban. They also hear about their job perks. They like eating some of the korbanot to feed them and keeping the hides of the animals so that they may create tents or clothing or however they might need the hides. This is how they actually get paid for their work, their service. And second, there is a ritual to inaugurate the Mishkan, the sanctuary for God. It is known as Miluim. Now, some of you might have heard this term before outside of Israel. Miluim, although in the Torah means inauguration, here it means the service for our beloved children and family to go and serve in our army to protect our land and people. So in a way, the Kohanim are kind of the first runners of this service, of coming up for Miluim, their service to God. And this is where we get the term from. So it's sort of like a grand opening of a store, and it lasts for 7 days. Now, this is very powerful because we know about waiting 7 days before engaging the Brit Milah, 7 days after menstruation. There are different key periods where we move in some state from a state of impurity to purity. And there's something to be said about them isolating to train and to learn this service to then come out on this eighth day, just like Jewish boys are circumcised on the eighth day. So part of this is getting the Mizbeach ready for the Korbanot. They have lots of things they have to get ready in the Mishkan, in the sanctuary for God. And part of this is getting the Kohanim ready for their new roles, which is a pretty big thing, right? I just want to touch on a couple of things from this Torah portion, because some of you have even written in and asked, like, it's hard to for some people to learn things from Leviticus, from Vayikra. They get caught up in the details of the laws, and they hard to pull back and say, what is this big picture? What's going on here? Why are we having to learn from this? And there's some beautiful things that happen in here that I just want to point out. Give me 1 second while I review my notes. So first thing I want to say is that when God creates the world in the book of Bereshit, in the book of creation, first stories, God assesses, like pulls back, does that big view, and assesses the orderly universe and declares it good. And there's something to be said about this creating of the Mishkan and then being able to pull back, assessing the orderliness now of the community and how they are to serve God and declaring it good, being ready for this service, right? So we might say that order in this sense, especially for this community, our ancestors, B'nai Israel, the children of Israel, that order is a response to transgression. It's often how many of us will respond to trauma or difficulty in life, getting things in order, reassessing. So as we know, we had the incident of the golden calf, and there's this real sense of trying to establish what is the daily routine. How are we going to serve God? How are we going to function as a community? How are we going to live by this new rule of law, this Torah, right? So when transgression happens, it's an opportunity. It's actually a hizdamnut to assess what are our boundaries and setting them or reaffirming them or establishing new ones, right? So there's a real sense that if when in the Torah in general, that when transgression happens, it has it threatens not only the order, but the intimacy and connection that governs the relationship with society and service to God. So the order, in a way, is this, it has a twofold process. It brings attention to the issue, and then there's a resolution. And so, and of course, through that builds connection, it also builds habits. It starts to form what we do daily in our Musar mindfulness practice, this habituation, internalization of our values and who we want to be, and then also living them out. So there's a sense of accountability when the whole community moves through this, right? It's using ritual now in the Mishkan to refocus attention and priority. So there's something actually quite important that happens that you'll notice in this Torah portion, where the Kohen who's responsible for raking out the ashes that happen to form after all the korbanot for the day, that they have to rake them out and take them out. It's a job of cleaning the ashes from the mizbeah, from the order. And this appears in our weekly Torah portion right at the beginning, chapter 6, verses 3 and 4. There are lots of stories in Midrashim about this, about the beautiful sound of the rake and how it made music, that you could hear it all the way, 18 miles away in Yericho. Lots of wonderful stories about this. But what I want to point out here is there's this daily mundane habitual act that has to happen in order to clean out what was done the day before, in order to set and be ready. It's not unlike cleaning the dishes daily, cooking the meals daily for the family. Things that we take for granted, things that we might not even look forward to, things that we actually might not accept. The mida of acceptance is accepting in Musar a sort of suffering to the world. And by suffering, I don't necessarily mean like war and horrible traumatic things. I mean more the definition in Buddhism called dukkha. This idea that there is a certain unsatisfactoriness, a certain unwantedness to elements of life. What our teacher, Christina Feldman, calls the inarguables. Things that will happen that we have no control over, that we actually can't change. We're all born, we'll all get sick, and we'll all die. And the ashes and the act of it are things that will happen that are just out of our control, right? They come, they have to be cleaned. We can fight against it and struggle against it all we want. I don't want to do the ashes again. I'm sick of it. I'm tired of it. Just like when we look at that pile of dishes in the sink, right? Or having to remove them from the dishwasher and put them back in. So there's this beautiful thing that goes on where the Kohen changes his clothing in order to do the task, then changes again. There's this whole ritualization in order, I think, to bring purpose and meaning to almost battle and fight is too strong. It's not the verb I'm looking for. But it's recognizing that when we have to do mundane acts that are actually in service of God, to run for the community, keep things in order, we have to ritualize them. We have to infuse them with much beauty and meaning as possible. So the ritualization of changing the clothing and doing the act and changing the clothing, like making sure that there's a real marker that I'm not wearing the same clothing of my service in the Mishkan as I enter out into the community and then out into the Midbar to let go of the ashes or bury them. There is a real sense and recognition. The same thing that why we have this Midrashim coming, for instance, actually this comes from the Mishnah in Tamid 3:8, where it discussed the activities in the Mishkan that you could hear from far away, and the sound of the magrifav, the raking of the ashes, right, that deal with the Trumat Hadeshen, the job of cleaning the ashes from the Mizbeach, from the altar, right? That this, it was like a musical instrument, using music to infuse the act with purpose and meaning. This is how we work on balanced acceptance. This is how we work on accepting the inarguables, the things that we cannot control and change. It's like the serenity prayer that's often stated in the practice and communities of Alcoholic Anonymous and all their different branches, that there's a real sense that you must come to accept the things you cannot change. Of course, having the courage to change the things you can, and developing and cultivating the wisdom to know the difference, to stop this wasting of time and energy, struggling with that which just has to be accepted. And so I feel like this is what the ashes really teach us. It's a chore. It's a dirty chore. It's not one that you would necessarily, I mean, there are all sorts of stories that actually all the Kohanim actually did fight over who got to rake the ashes. Do we see all of our children fighting and rushing to go do the dishes? We have to see, but these are the things that have to be done to keep order, to keep that we can have cleanliness, to show that we're honoring our home given by God. The same thing with honoring this Mishkan, the sanctuary given by God. There's something really profound and beautiful about having to address these tasks, even dirty ones, with ritualization. I'm going to change my clothing. I'm going to acknowledge that there's a shift from me doing this activity to another. I'm going to have music, whether it's me singing or humming or having something else. This is quite beautiful and profound. So I think that this is one of the important lessons that we are to gain from this Torah portion, this real sense that the final raking also is a real occupation and I'm trying to say the word in English, it's clear, recognition of the achievements of the previous day. Look at all these korbanot that everyone brought. Look at how they want to be drawn near to you. Likrov, right? The same shorish, the root of korbanot, huf resh vet, is to draw near. So think of the awe that could be cultivated, right? This sense of yirah, this awe and fear of Hashem, of God. And look at all these ashes. Look at how much they love you and want to show up and serve you. It's very profound. So may we be able to infuse this with our daily mundane acts that we might actually struggle with and not want to do, that we just have to accept are part of life. You can turn to any Instagram post where there are mothers, often mostly mothers, but sometimes fathers, complaining yet of another day of dishes to do, more meals to cook. May we look at that sink full of dishes or the dishwasher and say, look how much they love you, Hashem, that they've said all these blessings, these brachot, before they ate and after, that these dishes are evidence of, that they are so grateful for the food that you've provided. So the final thing I will say that I think is beautiful in this Torah portion that we can learn from, is essentially that the offering of the chatat offering, the sin offering, that when you have sinned by accident, bishkaga, without intention, that that offering happens in the exact same location as the olah offering, of the one that is full burnt offering on the altar that someone brings, not because they've sinned, just bringing an olah offering, right? And a lot of people, commentators come and they say, why is the sin offering being offered in the same location as the olah offering? Questioning maybe it should be offered in a different location or place. And who comes but Reish Lakish and Vayikra Rabba 32:6. Now, if you don't know who Reish Lakish is, he's a beloved ancestor who started his adult life in criminal activity. He was known to be a part of what are they called in English? Kind of raiders, to be honest with you, the people that traveled around and looted and stole from wherever they traveled. And he ends up, of course, the famous story of Rav Noch Yochanan, who ends up being his havruta, his learning partner, in a sense, a teacher also, where Rav Yochanan is able to bring him to law and order, to intimacy and connection with God and also community. And so Reish Lakish has this amazing background of lawlessness, right? Of sin, to bring to all of us to know he has something to teach, something to offer from this past experience. And he comes to say, why is the chatat offered in the same place? He says right here, Amar Reish Lakish, kedei shelo yitparsemu hachataim. It is in order not to publicize who sinned. Let me repeat that. It's in order to not publicize who sinned. Meaning I sinned. I'm coming up to the Mishkan to offer my sin offering, probably feeling embarrassment or shame about it, guilt. And I come, and the Kohen leads me to the same location as the Olah. People are offering Olah offerings. And nobody knows, unless I say, hi, I'm here to offer a sin offering. Nobody knows that I'm coming to offer a sin offering. That's between Hashem and me. And I come and I offer it. Because it's in the same location, I'm not publicizing that I've sinned, right? It probably was embarrassing for some people to bring this, right? So Reish Lakish suggests that God made the place of the chatat and the same place as the olah, so nobody would be able to tell the korban that you were bringing, and nobody would have to know that you had sinned by accident without intention. So this is very profound. What is deep behind that is this beautiful principle, right? That we don't want to cause others any additional, unnecessary shame, discomfort when they have done something wrong and improper that they have regretted and they are now taking responsibility for and bringing it forward. So there's real special care that is the organization of the space against Seder order, in order to honor that this formal worship is going to be one that doesn't bring unnecessary attention to those who've already had to go through the process of recognizing the sin, perhaps having to practice around that second arrow that they feel badly about it. And then there could be even like a third arrow that they're feeling badly, that they feel badly, all the things that we can go through when we have sinned. So as we say goodbye to Parshat Tzav, really recognizing that this miluim, this ordination, inauguration of the priesthood, is really recognizing Moshe Rabbeinu, our teacher Moshe, in a new role, that of priest maker, that which is cultivating and developing these priests, how to move through formal worship. What's going to be required in the Mishkan, which I told you lasts for hundreds and hundreds of years, even into the land of Israel, land of Canaan, lasting another 400 or 500 years there. That is just very profound. So with that, we're going to move into our mindfulness meditation together in order to internalize some of this practice. So I want you to assume one of the classic four mindfulness meditation postures, seated like I am, either on a chair or on a zafu, a meditation cushion, walking back and forth, nowhere in particular, just being mindful of your walking, and lying down if needed, especially if you have any pain, low back pain, and of course, standing often in a strong mountain pose. That you're ready. So invite yourself fully here, like you would a best friend. Come with mind, body, soul, spirit, everything. Let's move through three deep breaths. So inhalation and exhale. Did you feel your shoulders lower on that one? I did. Inhalation. And exhale. And finally, again, this one, this time raising your shoulders up to your ears. Inhalation. And exhale. Letting them lower, erect, seated or standing or walking or lying with dignity, because you were created in the image and likeness of the divine. This real beauty here, letting your breath fall to its own natural rhythm and pace. No need to control it or make something happen. Meditation is not about controlling the breath. There are meditations like that, but not mindfulness meditation. Here, we're just simply observing whatever arises without reactivity. So you may have thoughts that arise, sensations in the body calling for your loving attention. Some of us could even have scripts, narratives, storytelling moving through our head, just becoming aware of whatever is happening. And without judgment, coming with compassion, just simply bring yourself back to an anchor, which can be your breath to pay attention to, or can be my voice as I lead us through this meditation. It is natural for the mind to wander. It doesn't mean you're a bad meditator. You simply become aware of it and bring yourself back to your anchor. As our teacher Joseph Goldstein loves to say, simply begin again. That's a beautiful exercise, and one I imagine our ancestors, the Kohanim, did when they were raking this magrifa, right, of the ashes away. Simply begin again. And that's us as we sit here, right? Raking away, letting the thoughts fall, letting the breath fall to its own natural rhythm, letting the sensations in the body rise and fall, each of them passing most likely in about a minute and a half. Fully arriving. So we will move through a mindfulness meditation of acceptance, Kabbalah, not the mystical part of Judaism, the real Kabbalah of acceptance, of receiving whatever arises without reactivity. So first, we just have to recognize whatever arises. And some of us will go through states, things that might even feel like a nisayon, a trial. That might be sloth and torpor, or real tiredness, where we're kind of like nodding off with our head. For some of us, there might be a lot of agitation and movement. Our legs are kind of hopping. This real sense of having difficulty of being at ease that only gets worse when we struggle. From time to time, I will go silent, allowing us time to be in silence, to gain mindfulness, awareness of whatever is arising. So for some of you, it'll become very obvious that you feel stuck somewhere, that there's actually a stasis, right? Whatever the arising, certain shelf life and passing has happened, we feel that we're stuck, like in traffic. That might be with reminiscing about something in the past or planning for the future. It might be from certain sensations in the body or pain. It might be emotions that are arising from the sitting. You feel that you can't just be with whatever has arisen. You feel stuck. So acknowledging that, accepting it. Even saying it out loud, feel stuck with the pain in my low back. I feel stuck with my anger at my sister from yesterday's conversation. I feel stuck that I have a sink full of dishes to do after this, whatever it might be. You, of course, could go to the large, totally uncontrollable phenomenon in life. I feel stuck with the ongoing wars and genocide all throughout the world. I feel stuck with global warming, climate change. I feel stuck with the polarization of society, that it's difficult to communicate and connect. So many opportunities to rake away the ashes. So recognizing the big stuckness and the small stuckness. Saying, I can attempt to accept you right here and right now. You're just here, like a big lump. See how it feels in the body. Is there a big matzo ball sitting in your stomach? Maybe the chest feels constricted, there's no expansion. Maybe there's a tightness in your heels. What is your embodied experience of this stuckness? This is the real investigation right now. If it begins to feel too overwhelming, you chose something that's too difficult to address as a stuck entity right now. Simply honor that. No need to get angry or push it away. to judge. Just simply accept that. Maybe select something less intense. If you need to open your eyes, to place yourself where you are in this meditation, that you are safe and here on this shared meditation together in this sacred Zoom gathering live stream, or joining us on the podcast. For some of you, it may help to put your hand on your chest or your belly, even rub yourself. This real act of self-compassion and radical self-care. We cannot be a conduit of God's good to others if we are not caring for the self at the same time. Just like the Kohen cannot serve God and bring on more karbanot, more offerings, without removing the ashes from the day before, we must also engage in that which sometimes feels unwanted, unsatisfactory, uncontrollable, that which is dirty, may feel impure, breaking away what needs to be done, recognizing the connection and intimacy it leads to, the ability to engage in bringing God's good. Which leads us to the very part of this, important part of this meditation practice today, which is really honoring a non-identification with whatever arises. You don't have to identify and think this is you, whatever this stuckness is. And you don't have to practice aversion either, pushing it away. That will just make it stronger. Instead, there's a real nurturing, again, with the self-compassion of recognizing you're not alone. We all have this shared humanity of facing the ashes on a daily basis, the thing that we don't want to accept, the thing that is stuck. And we know together, taking refuge in community with the Institute for Holiness, that we can gather, that we can gather and face the ashes together. That which is unwanted, that we don't have balanced acceptance around yet. And we can practice, and we can cultivate. The real sense that you are worthy and you are needed, no matter how mundane and dirty the task that we must engage in. We'll spend the next minute in silence before I ring the bells to pull us out of our shared meditation today. Kindly asking yourself, what do I need right now? Can I be with this? How do I bring some love and nurturing to myself, to this stuckness? If you have your eyes shut, please slowly and gently open them, allowing the light to come back in, especially if you're watching by video. The screen can be a little daunting to come back to. Bowing to God, to Hashem, for bringing us to this moment, to Shehecheyanu, to gathering us today to be able to sit and practice and learn together. A gentle bow, honoring refuge and community, our teachers, our ancestors, and to yourself for the courage and discipline to engage in this practice, to join us on our weekly awakening here at the Institute for Holiness, Kehillat Musar Mindfulness. I'm delighted that you joined us. Thank you for taking the time. Remember, we are dedicating this year to the coping with survival, healing from the genocide done to us in Israel on October 7th by Palestinian terrorists and Hamas and Islamic Jihad and the continuing of Hezbollah and the Houthis, ongoing war with the proxies of Iran and then obviously Iran. So these teachings and practices are dedicated to that coping and healing process that some of us can engage in, some of us can't right now, to just be there as a rock to support one another. So use this practice, this meditation today of recognizing, allowing, acknowledging, investigating, and then this non-identification, the nurturing. Which the acronym, the Rosh Tevot, are R-A-I-N, the RAIN practice that Michelle McDonald created years ago. Tara Brach has really caused it to be branded and explode throughout the world. The wonderful practice to work on acceptance, sometimes radical acceptance, where we need to be in our practice or not. So, we accept donations to continue this weekly public offering. Please reach out, give whatever you can to support us here at the Institute to offer this. We also have sponsorships in memory of someone or also honoring someone. So, please reach out to me at rabbihasia@kehilatmusar.com so that we can arrange that for you. Thank you again so much. Wishing you all well.